Justin actually is a licensed aircraft maintenance engineer. I think hopefully I got all that right. Training professional with 40 years of experience in the aviation industry, employed by Bombardier Aerospace. He was a technical instructor for 25 years and is currently developing pilot training programs on commercial and business aircraft. So that's his day job. And on the weekends, he preaches and teaches on the creation issue. He's also a founding member of Creation Science Association of Quebec. May he tell you more about that. And one of the things that I'm really excited about is when I was a student at McGill, I was studying physiology, doing my Bachelor of Science. And as a committed Christian, I suddenly was challenged and faced with a lot of evolutionary teaching. Especially at the university level, it was pretty heavy. The issue of evolution was basically from the perspective of the university was seen as a fact, you know, not even really taught as a theory. And as a Christian, I became very confused. I tried to understand how I could reconcile the biblical account with all this so-called information I was getting from professors and textbooks. And I became quite confused. And it was a spiritual struggle for me for a little while until I was faced with a lot of the exciting information that Creation Ministries has. And I was challenged to see the scriptures as they are, plain and literal view. And also became to see that there's a lot of scientific evidence that does point and support the creation account. So that's just my story. I hope and trust that you'll be encouraged and challenged through this sermon, but let's give a round of applause and welcome to God.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. Are we live? Good. I'm here today with my wife. She's the one in the middle here, right? That's right there, right? I turned it on. Anyway, she's in the back here. She accompanies me when I'm on the doing local talks. Next week, I'll be speaking in Laval. 2 weeks later, I'll be in Winnipeg. And they get me traveling across the country. And so I'm a national speaker. I said, just give me one talk in the United States or somewhere else, and I could say I'm an international speaker. But anyway, so yeah, I have four sons. Well, my wife does too. And we have three grandchildren. Oh, I can tell you about Fiona. She's 2.5. She called me Papa Gus, and she's fantastic. I actually work full-time for Bombardier. I'm developing technical training on the Global 7000 and for Bombardier. And on behalf of the company, thank you all for your contributions. You know, when I was speaking out west a number of years ago, I've been doing this for CMI for about 4.5 years. I'd go out west and I'd say, I work for Bombardier. And they all say, who, what? I don't get that anymore. So, you know, we're bombarded day after day, week after week, year after year with the ideas that the universe is billions of years old and that evolution can explain everything. And whether it be in classrooms or on TV and movies, even on Sesame Street, we're presented with ideas that things lived and died millions and billions of years ago. No surprise there. So little Johnny, when he goes to Sunday school, such a church like this, he's taught from a young age that God created everything. That's what the Bible says. And it was about 6,000 years ago, if you do the full chronology of the scriptures. And then they get questions. What about dinosaurs? Now, dinosaurs are always associated with 65 million years. And so, of course, how do you fit 65 million years in with the biblical account? It's a good question. It's a legitimate question. The problem is you have to disassociate the dinosaurs from the millions of years, and then we can start working from there. What about Ice Age? I even saw the cartoons, the movies on the Ice Ages, right? So, well, how do I deal with those things? Aren't there hundreds of thousands or thousands of years old? And then you have questions, why are the water for the flood came in? And where did God come from? And, of course, all these questions keep popping up. And, unfortunately, the church hasn't really spent a lot of time on this. In fact, some of the church even say, we accept evolution. No problem. Although we would say that that has had a significant negative effect. You need to understand that the idea of evolution, the Darwinian idea that nature can explain everything, is a relatively modern one. And the idea that the universe is millions or billions of years is a relatively new one. In fact, up till about 200 years ago, it was taught in universities that the biblical narrative, the biblical history, was the true history of the world. That God had created everything in six normal days, and about 1,600 years later, there was a global flood to destroy it all. So that idea of the billions of years is novel. It is new. And when they first started promoting idea, they're saying, well, I'm getting ahead of myself. So we actually have two accounts of origins. One, the biblical account. We need to understand that it's the creation event on the first week of Genesis, as well as the global flood. Both of those are part of the history of the world that we see today. On the other hand, we heard about the Big Bang. 13.8 billion years ago, first there was nothing, and then it blew up. And so this is the reigning paradigm. It's taught in universities. I mean, this is what the real smart people want us to believe. So Creation Ministries International, along with some sister organizations like Answers in Genesis, Institute of Creation Research, want to help the church to deal with the issue. We recently came out with remodeled our new website. We're an information and apologetics ministry. Seven countries. We have more PhD scientists on staff than any other creationist ministry. And our role is to help the church to deal with the creation evolution question. And so you can see the website there. Just type in any question, almost 11,000 articles on that subject. A fantastic resource, lots of videos. I could go all day talking about it, tons of videos. And the books you have downstairs and DVDs are written and produced by our staff, primarily in the United States, and they have the credentials to produce this material. And we also have info bites. We're going to ask the ushers to come and distribute those. And this is a sign up for our periodic email that comes out. Called InfoBytes, and all you have to do is put your name, email address. Please, sometimes people write like they're writing Arabic, so we're asking to make it in English. You know, a lot of Christians do not have a problem when they see the design in nature. So for things like this, for example, that hummingbird is supposed to hum. There it is, it's humming. Okay. When you look at this amazing, living, biological, organic creature flying, and you marvel at the intricacy. I mean, look at how fast it can beat its wing. Its heart rate is just mind-boggling. If any engineer was trying to create, they'd say, wow, this is phenomenal, phenomenal. And so a lot of Christians, a lot of people have no problem with looking at the creation evolution question from this point of view, that the very design of living things speaks to an intelligent creator. That's usually not the problem. Okay. And we have a hummingbird come back again. So, however, we're told that it wasn't over thousands of years as the biblical account is. It takes 13.8 billions of years. That's what we're told. The philosophy behind this is what we call naturalism. In other words, nature explains everything. That the whole design of the universe, you know, they accept that the hummingbird is intricately designed. They accept that that is, an amazing biological machine, but they will say that it was evolution. Over millions and billions of years that created this. And so nature becomes, in fact, God. And it becomes somewhat an idol. God has been replaced by nature, by evolution. And they say worship evolution because this is our creator. It is really idolatry. Along with that, of course, you have what they say happens in a strata. Things lived and died over millions and billions of years. And so all of this tells us that there was death, disease, extinction, carnivory over countless periods of time. Unimaginable. The biblical account is rather short in comparison. It's only 6,000 years, which is still a long time. But the Bible is very clear on this. And of course, the timeline is relatively simple. About 6,000 years ago, God made two people in a garden in Eden. Are we going to find it? If anybody looked for a Garden of Eden, are they going to find it? No. It'll be long gone because the global flood would have erased any trace of it. Totally rearranged the surface of the earth. And then, of course, you have a flood. Now, you can understand a flood wasn't just a little inundation like we have in Pierrefonds where I live last year, right? This is global tsunamis that cause continents to collide into each other, some subducted, some lifted up, massive amounts of movement of the earth, which would have changed everything. But this has been a real problem. So, as I said, this is a relatively new phenomenon over millions of years that even biblical scholars wrestle with this. For example, here we have Gleason Archer, I don't know if he's still alive, but he was a well-known evangelical Bible commentator. He wrote this: from a superficial reading of Genesis 1, the impression would seem to be that the entire creative process took place in 6 24-hour days. We agree. If that was the true intent of the Hebrew author, this seems to run counter to modern scientific research, which indicates that the planet Earth was created several billion years ago. So here's an evangelical scholar who's helping young Christians and the Christian world to deal with the question, and he's not sure. He seems to think that science, the evolutionists, pretty much have concluded that we're talking billions of years. So when we have creationists that come along, such as myself, who say the earth isn't anywhere near that, we're looked at somewhat askance, like flat earth people, which we do not accept. So, do you believe in flat earth? I mean, really? So when you look at creation, really? How can people, modern thinking people, believe the earth isn't millions and billions of years old? Why, isn't that what they say? Ernst Mayr said this: the Darwinian revolution began when it became obvious that the earth was rather ancient rather than having created only 6,000 years ago. This finding was a snowball that started the whole avalanche. In other words, in order for evolution to be accepted, they first had to deal with the age question. That was the first thing that happened, with guys like Hutton and Lyell came along and said, well, 6,000 years isn't going to cut it. We need millions of years to make it happen. And as soon as that happened, then the biblical account, the narrative, started to collapse. And now we're trying to piece it back together. But what does it matter? What really does it matter? Is it just an academic exercise? You believe that God used, the creation account, and others say God used evolution. What difference does it make? This is a very important question, because if you need to know this. If you walk away from here today without, this is what you need to walk away from today, why this is important. And the importance is it has to do literally with life and death. Literally with life and death. How so, you may ask? Well, it's a good question. We're all going to die. I have a friend who's got ALS, and he's having difficulty speaking and swallowing and breathing, etc. It's a horrible disease. Why? Not why does he have the disease, but is death the way it's always been? Or is this an intrusion upon God's created universe? A lot of people look at the Bible and they say, well, it's not a science book. Okay, and that's really an irrelevant comment, because it's not a question about science, it's a question about history. Which is the true history of the world? Is it the one about the Big Bang that we're supposed to believe in, although nobody's ever seen it, or the one whom God has revealed to us that 6,000 years ago God made everything, right? The Bible is God's revelation. It's not man's writing. It's God's revelation to us. And he's telling us what he did. We need to take it as that. Now, what did he say? Well, he said something about this, that he said he took 6 days. We know it's 6 days. And he said that it was good. Every day it was very good. All right. So we know it's very good. And that's what he says. And he saw it was all very good. So what does that mean? If it was very good, that means there was no death at this time. Nothing was, people weren't eating animals and animals weren't eating people. That sounds pretty good to me, right? Unless you're not a vegetarian, and then I'm not a vegetarian, so okay. But, so nobody was eating anybody. There was no death, there was no disease, there was nothing. It was a paradise. It was a Garden of Eden. So then I have a problem then. We know that's not the way it is in the world today. We know there's a lot of bad things going on in the world. So what do I do with this bad stuff, this disease, this death? Where do I fit it in with the biblical account? Well, the Bible is very clear that it happened after God had made everything very, very good. So first there was no death, and then there was death. All right, that's pretty straightforward. But now what am I going to do with all those millions and billions of years we're told about, which the fossil record, they say, tells us that things lived and died over millions of years? How do I fit it in? That's a good question. How do I fit it in? And so a lot of people are trying to compromise Genesis and trying to shoehorn all this evolutionary ideas of millions of years into the 6 days of creation and somehow try and make it fit with various schemes. And our position is, don't bother. They never happened in the first place. Oh, wow. You know, the Bible tells us that the wages of sin is what? Is death, right? Adam and Eve brought death into the world, brought sin into the world, and therefore death was as a consequence. But if this is not true, if this historical account is not true, then death is not a consequence of anyone's sin. And therefore, the idea that someone like Christ could shed his blood to pay for our sins is a non-starter. It's no longer relevant. Sin isn't a result of Adam's sin. It's just the way the world is. So maybe we need to look at something different. Maybe all these alleged millions and millions of years as a result of Adam's sin. And that would fit. So we look at that. We fit it right in here. First you have Adam's sin, which brought death. And the bad things. And the fossil record is a record of the bad things that have happened. Everything we see today is a result of it. Fossils are a record of things that died after Adam. Which means that the time frame is rather constrained. That we have to fit all those evolutionary ideas into less than 6,000 years. And how are we going to do that? You need to understand that this whole idea of death as a consequence of Adam's sin is not lost on atheists and evolutionists and those who hate God, but it's oftentimes lost on Christians. This gentleman a number of years ago said it becomes clear now that the whole justification for Jesus' life and death is predicated on the existence of Adam and the forbidden fruit he and Eve ate. Without the original sin, who needs to be redeemed? Without Adam's fall into a life of constant sin terminated by death, what purpose is there to Christianity? None. You remove Adam, you remove the gospel. There is nothing. It's irrelevant. But the Bible is very clear that God had sent his son. Why? That we should not perish as a result of Adam's sin, but we can have eternal life. This is the promise of God. This is the promise of Easter. This is what Christianity offers that no other religion can offer, and that is life. Life. You need to remember that. This issue is whether Christianity is true. If Christianity is the only one that offers life, but if it isn't true, then you might as well go home. Because it has no more benefit than any other religion. Then you might as well pick one that suits your fancy and believe that, because they're all not going to give you life. But through Christ, we are guaranteed eternal life. All right. You know, sometimes people think that creationists and evolutionists are dealing with different facts, and that's not the case. We deal with the same fact. We deal with the same fossils. Right? We don't have our own set, then they have their own set. We're all to do with it. It's a question of how you interpret that. In the evolutionary point of view, things have been happening over millions and billions of years through very slow processes. The idea is called uniformitarianism. The idea of what we see happening today has always been happening at that rate. So when the continents, they say, move apart at very slow rate, continental drift, well, they say that's been happening at that same rate for them to move. It's got to take millions and millions of years. But maybe that's not true. Maybe there were catastrophes along the way. For example, Noah's flood isn't a catastrophe, which would have changed the speed of everything in orders of magnitudes. Instead of slow, gradual processes, they would have been very rapid processes. Things speeded up by thousands of times. This is what we call catastrophism. So we have two views of ways of looking at the scientific evidence that we're going to talk about this morning. Is that, does a rapid process explain it or a slow gradual process explain them? Which is the better explanation? Now, if you are, you know, people say, I believe in science. Well, if you're really believing in science, that means you need to take in all views. You can't just say, I only restrict. It's like the Russian election, right? We're going to vote. How many of you go? Only get one choice. Well, what kind of a democratic vote is that? And in many cases in schools, they only give you one choice. The choice has to be along the lines of naturalism, where God is excluded. But wait a minute, what if God is actually had done all of these things? Why are you excluding God? Right? He may in fact be the real truth. So if God is excluded, then you may be in fact teaching lies. All right. So let's look at one of the very famous icons of billions of years. Anybody been to the Grand Canyon? It is indeed a Grand Canyon. It is a grand, grand canyon. Remember the first time I saw that? It's mind-boggling. It's huge and it's long. If you ever have a chance, I would suggest going there. So they say that this canyon took almost 2 billion years for those layers to build up. You go to the Interpretation Center, that's what the plaques will say. Okay. But as a creationist and a biblical creationist, I say, well, there's no way it could take billions of years because there's not billions of years to take. We don't have that much time. You need to understand something about the Grand Canyon. Here you can see on the right, this is the canyon here, right? This is about 7,000 feet above sea level. So how do I carve? What happened here? The other thing you're going to notice is that the strata that you can see from the side of the Grand Canyon is extending over hundreds, if not thousands of miles. These layers aren't just local Grand Canyon. They go for thousands and thousands of miles. In fact, all the way sometimes to England. We see this around the world. All this layering effect. Okay. Interesting to note, if you head north and towards Utah, Bryce Canyon, you will notice that it seems like a whole lot of this material is missing. It's all been gone. Well, how are you going to remove all of this material after it was laid out? You need some kind of something to move it. And a lot of force and a lot of energy. Where are you going to get that? The global flood will provide you with that energy to move all of this material that's gone from here. Okay. So when you look at a cross-sectional view of the Grand Canyon, these are the ages over here. You'll come to what they call at the very bottom the Vishnu Basement Rocks. And they said it's about 1.8 billion years, they say. Okay. Except they have what call the Great Unconformity. There's 500 million years, they say, of evolutionary time, which is missing. How do you lose 500 million years of rock? No explanation given. So let's go into one of the side canyons and see what we can see in there. This is very interesting. This is a place called the Deer Creek Trail. Okay, very interesting. Right, you see all these layers and strata along here, right? That's very interesting. So based on the alleged age of this canyon, Grand Canyon, I can say that about a foot took about 300,000 years to form, accumulate. 300,000 years to form a foot of this material. Just do the math. 6,000 feet divided by almost 2 billion years. 300,000, okay, that's quite amazing. But you'll notice something is very interesting. Where does material come from? The 6,000, all these layers, where did they come from in the first place? How did they get there? These are what they call sedimentary layers, sedimentary rocks. And by definition, sedimentary rocks are sedimented out of water. So the rocks themselves would have had to be brought there by water. That's what it's called sedimentary. So all these layers, as they were hunting billions of years, water's come along and deposited these layers, and every year they build up, and a foot, 300,000 years. But it's interesting to note, what don't you see in those layers? One of the things you don't see is you don't see any evidence of erosion. You don't see any plants. You don't see any roots. All you see is just bare dirt. So what it would say is that, what they're saying is that over the course of 300,000 years for this foot, nothing grew, nothing was eroded. How is that possible? 300,000 years, no rain, and yet it was water that brought this in the first place. How come there was no erosion? How is that possible? You see the conundrum, right? So let's ask the question. Can we get this layering at a lot faster rate than 300,000 years for a foot? And the answer is yes. That's why we're here. So in Missouri, in the United States, there is a museum to the steamboat Arabia. This was a paddle wheeler on the Missouri River, kind of like the Mississippi River. And it was sunk by somehow the hull got a hole in it, and it sunk, and it had a lot of household goods. So somebody thought, well, let's go and uncover this, and let's try and recover these goods and make a museum out of that, which they did. So some farmer, kind of like Bob Holly and his sons, they set out to find this boat, and in 1987, they used a proton magnetometer. I don't even know what that is. It sounds pretty important. But anyway, they found this half a mile from the river. They found a riverboat a half a mile from the river. It was sunk. Okay, that's very interesting. How does a riverboat? Well, because the Missouri River is a meandering river. It keeps changing course over a period of time. So over 132 years, it had actually changed course by a half a mile. It was 45 feet deep. And so that's what they did. The farmer said, yes, you can dig up the ground and dig it out, but you got to put the dirt back for the next planting season. And so they got their excavators, and they're hauling out this material. And you see the pumps there are trying to keep the water up because it's sandy and there's a lot of water coming down there. All right. So they actually did. They got a lot. You go down to Missouri and you go to the museum. Fantastic. All kinds of plates and jewelry and things like that from 132 years ago. One of the things you'll notice along the side there, you'll see this. What do you see all of this? This is all this layering effect. This is all the sedimenting, right? I get 45 feet in 132 years. 45 feet in 132 years. How much could it have in 1,000 years? Well, quite a bit more. Mount St. Helens is also good evidence of this layering effect. Mount St. Helens was a dormant volcano in the Washington state. And in 1980, it rumbled up and it blew up. And 1,600 times the force of the Hiroshima atomic bomb. Flattened trees 10 miles. And there was about 100 people who died. They were told it was coming. They saw it coming. They didn't think it would happen. And they died anyway. So here's the top, gone. And as you see in the distance here, you see all this here? This is the material from the top, which came down and filled up your Spirit Lake. And it laid about 600 feet of material off in the distance. Now, this volcano wasn't quite done. 2 years later, it started to get agitated, and it had another eruption. And so what happened is, this is what was laid down in 1980, and in 1982, the material from the top of the mountain came down and carved this canyon. Carved this canyon, 600 feet, in just a very short period of time, within that year. Right? So this little river, they say, well, you know, they ask the question, how long did it take that river, very small river, to carve the canyon? Like they do with the Grand Canyon, Colorado River. How long does it take the Colorado River to carve out the Grand Canyon? But that would be the wrong question to ask because the river did not carve this canyon. It was the eruption from 1982, all in one fell swoop, remove all this material with a very short period of time. And one of the things you'll notice along the side here, you see all this layering. Why? That looks a lot like Grand Canyon layering. The picture, I need a better one, but you can see here. You see this is 20 feet worth? One day. One day. So if I get 20 feet in one day, how much can I get in 300 days, the course of a year, let's say? Well, I can get about 6,000 feet. So when you look at the global flood, the flood of Noah, which would have moved a lot of dirt, with a lot of water, and tsunami after tsunami, building up on the continents, laying out layer after layer after layer after layer, then over the course of a year, I can get 6,000 feet. So when I look at the Grand Canyon, I say to myself, we have observed 20 feet and more in one day. Why should I then believe that the Grand Canyon took 2 billion years to form. Now, you need to know that we can't prove that the Grand Canyon, because you can't go back in time. We cannot prove that the Grand Canyon didn't take 2 billion years, but neither can they prove that it did. We have other, look at the polystratic fossils. So these are tree trunks that are turned to stone. They're called polystrata because they go through many layers of rock. So I have two options here. If I believe the layers they're in took millions and millions of years to form, that means I would have to argue that the tree remained upright, whilst the layers took millions of years to form. So how old would the tree be? Millions and millions of years. Or the tree was kept upright whilst the flood and all the material built up around it, the strata, and they all hardened together. That makes much more sense than presupposing that trees could actually last millions and millions of years. Right? And what do we do with things like these bent sedimentary or folded sedimentary rocks? Have you ever tried to fold rock or bend rock? Doesn't go too well. Okay. Here is another one. You see the car in the bottom? That is a lot. 90 degree bend in rock. How are you going to bend rock? Well, any geologist will tell you that as you bend or you try to bend, it shatters. Compression and tension shatters them all and just get rubble. Well, this is no evidence of rubble. There's no evidence of these tension cracks or cracks at all. It looks like the whole thing just bent up like this. Well, how do you do that? Only if it was in a plastic state, a plasmic state. In other words, that it was not hardened to rock yet, but it was soft. How? And all at once. So you have all of this. I don't know how many hundreds of feet this is, but all of this was bent up together. What sort of scenario? Well, the idea that the flood had laid out all these layers, and then you had the continents colliding with each other, buckling up, and some of them got bent 90 degrees. That would make sense. And what about dinosaurs? Oh, dinosaurs. You know, I once had a guy say, well, you know, the dinosaurs, Satan put those dinosaurs in the rock, the fossils, in order to test Christians. And I said to him, don't ever say that to anybody. Okay? That is one of the dumbest things I ever heard. Okay? There were dinosaurs. There were lots of dinosaurs. It got very big. We have the fossil evidence to prove it. 100%, no problem. The problem is that with dinosaurs, we're always programmed in millions of years. Listen to that. Anytime somebody talks about a dinosaur, they'll talk about 170 million year old fossil, 100 and some odd million, 65 million. They're always tied it together so that in our mind they think they're together, but separate them. What if dinosaurs are not millions of years old? Do we have any evidence for that? Well, let's talk about fossilization. Is there anything, what is fossilization? It's something that has been turned into rock. It could be impression of something like a leaf. It could be anything. It could be actual fossil. It's the bone, which is through permineralization has transferred the minerals into rock. So there's various types of fossilization, but basically it's something becoming rock. So when you look at this, for example, this hat, how old do you think this hat is? Millions of years? Not really talking maybe a couple hundred years, maybe. So one of my sons got a PhD last year in math and physics from Cambridge in England. We're very proud. So anyway, a couple of years before that, we decided to make this an excuse to go visit him. And we went to a place called Knaresborough in England. If you're here the last time, I may have mentioned this thing. It's called in Knaresborough, west of York in England. And there's a falls called a petrifying well. And a lot of heavy minerals come down to falls in water, and they hang things in this water. And so they will actually have hats and shoes and boots, even John Wayne's hat. Some of you younger people won't know who that is, but he was a great cowboy actor, right? In fact, here's a picture of John Wayne. See that?
Howdy, partner.
Yeah, they'll do right. So they even hang these little soft teddy bears in there, right? And so in 2015, I'm not sure before or after, actually my wife and I went there and we picked up one of these teddy bears. In 3 months, this little teddy bear is no longer that cuddly. It has become rock. Okay? So how long does it take to turn something into rock? Not that long at all. Obviously, 3 months is enough. How old do you think this thing is? Millions of years old? Nah, it's a water wheel in Australia. So when I look at this, what people say, no, these fossils, it takes millions of years to turn something into fossil. I said, I don't think so. We have concrete evidence. You know, here's an example of a fossilized squid. Now, Charles Darwin himself said, thinking that fossilization took millions of years, that no creature, which an invertebrate without bones, could be turned into fossils. Well, octopuses don't have fossils, don't have bones. And yet, there's a fossil of a octopus, which looks remarkably like a modern octopus. In fact, they were able to take some of the ink from the ink sac, reconstitute it, and the lady painted a picture with that of that octopus, as you see here, with the ink from that obviously dead octopus. And what about jellyfish? Anybody walked along the beach, saw dead jellyfish? You come back the next day, what's left? Mush, right? This thing just decayed very rapidly. So when you look at these fossilized jellyfish, how long would it take to keep that jellyfish in a shape that it could turn to rock into? Well, it's got to be a matter of days maybe, right? Days maybe. And what about these fish, a marine reptile, an ichthyosaur, in the process of giving birth, when it was buried and turned to rock, the mother and baby? Talk about long labors, right? I mean, if it took millions of years, that would be, okay. And what about the fish on the bottom? How do we know that this was an incredibly fast? Anybody here can experiment. You can try at home, kids. Get a fish, kill it, then, or just leave it to die, and leave it on a counter. So you're going to see what happens over a very short period of time. Your mother's going to get very annoyed. But is it going to turn into a fossil? No, what's going to happen? It's going to rot. It's going to decay, fall apart. All you're going to have is, well, it's going to have a mess, right? But this fish here, and they find billions of these fishes all jumbled together, indicating they were all buried at the same time, and they must have been turned into rock fossils very quickly because there's no evidence of decay. It looks like they were just swimming along, got pancake flat, turned to rock, and that was it. And now we look at it, think, oh, millions of years old, right? But almost instantly. In fact, secular science agrees that fossilization can be almost instant. Here, from New Scientist, there's a fern. A fern is just a plant. And they found a fossil of a fern in which they looked closely. They could see cell division, mitosis, I think it's called. Wow. Isn't that amazing? In fact, New Scientist in 2014 said this, fossilized almost instantly. It would have happened, it would have had to, because plants, when they die, they start to fall apart almost instantly. Instantly fossilized. Secular science agrees fossilization could be a instant process. Now, this is something I think the guy was a little crazy about, but it's suddenly engulfed by a lava flow. Now, if any of you have self-cleaning ovens, know that about 900 degrees Fahrenheit, right? What happens to all that organic material that's in your oven? It all turns to ash. Well, when hot liquid rock lands on a fern, what do you think is going to happen? It's going to turn to ash. So how can lava? Anyway, I disagree with him on that. But anyway, fossilization can be an incredible fast process. So why do I have to believe these are millions of years old? Simply somebody says it takes millions of years. I said, I don't think so. It doesn't require that. What about DNA? Everybody knows about DNA. If you watched any of the science or the cop shows, do DNA analysis, and you could do it almost overnight, they say, which is not quite the really way it works. But how long does DNA last? DNA is a very complex molecule, must be inside a living cell. And, of course, like any organic material, once the cell starts to die, it starts to decay and decompose. Nature, probably the most prestigious scientific journal in the world, did an article about DNA. And they said the DNA has a half-life of 521 years. Half-life simply says that if you have 100% in 521 years, you'll have half. Another 521 years, you'll have half of that, which makes it a quarter, and then an eighth and a sixteenth, et cetera, et cetera. So we're talking here tens of thousands of years before you have anything, before you have nothing useful left. So what then do we do with dinosaur DNA? So this is what we're finding, organic material and DNA in dinosaur bones. Here's Hadrosaur. This is a
dinosaur.
Tyrannosaurus rex. In 2005, a Dr. Mary Schweitzer was excavating a unfossilized Tyrannosaurus rex bone. She was digging through this, and she said, oh, she's found some organic material. She's on the microscope. Poof. She says, when she did experiments, they got rid of the bone, and they looked at the material. Flexible, resilient, when stretched, returns to its original shape. And she goes on and say, that's in 2005. And she says, when you think about it, the laws of chemistry and biology and everything else that we know say it should be gone. It should be completely degraded. We agree 100%. So then how do I account for that? Now, when she first proposed this, came out in the scientific journal, and I found Tyrannosaurus rex DNA, they all said, Dr. Schweitzer, we know that this cannot last 65 million years, so obviously there's something wrong with your protocols that you use in the lab. You must have got some biofilm, something else contaminated. And she went back and said, okay, for 10 years she was doing the research, trying to falsify her own finding, which is the way science is supposed to work. And she came up and said, listen, 10 years, listen, folks, I've done every way that we can, and this is the conclusion. This is real organic material from dinosaur, tyrannosaurus rex bones. Now, of course, after all this work, they finally came around. Smithsonian, National Geographic, all the scientists says, okay, we accept it as dinosaur material. And then I guess dinosaur material can last 65 million years. Because the alternative was, and the plain thing what she's saying is, it should be gone completely. So what does that say? Dinosaur bones are not millions of years, they're thousands of years, which fits in with the biblical narrative. But in order to maintain the paradigm and the funding, right, she has to, in fact, Dr. Mary Schweitzer, the theistic evolutionist, she says that creationists are taking her findings out of context. But out of context what? This clearly, she even admits, you know, she says there are virtually indistinguishable from tissue samples from modern species. Well, if they look like they're modern, maybe it's because they are modern. But if she said she came out with a biblical creationist, how much funding do you think she'd get? Go from whatever she gets to zero. Okay. World population. How many people are on Earth today? Roughly 7 billion. A lot of people. I'd give you an exact number, but it keeps changing. So we know that the human population is growing very fast. So if I was a biblical, I am a biblical creationist. So I said the last time people came, think about the ark. Noah's three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth, had wives. And so we're all descendants of those three couples. So that would mean in 4,500 years since the flood, can I get 7 billion people? If I was an evolutionist, I'd know now humans human-like creatures have been around for millions of years. Right? So it takes millions of years, they say, in order to get 7 billion people. So we put those two together. Does it take a million years or more to get 7 billion? Or can I have 7 billion in 4,500 years? Those are the options. Which do you think fits best with what we know about human population? So I went to the source of all knowledge. I went to the internet. And on that internet, I found this site, this picture from BBC. Not the Better Bible Company, but the British Broadcasting Corporation. And something they provide for kids, school kids in England. And I thought, this is a very interesting chart. Because on the right, you have populations in billions. And on the bottom, you have it now. It's wider on my screen, but anyway, you'll get it here. I put the cross on it to give you an idea when year zero was. Okay, they used BCE, before Christ. And so I notice here, listen, so we got 7 billion here now. All right, okay. And I noticed about 4,500 years ago, there was a dip. I think that might have been when the flood was. Yes, that would fit. But notice when it goes flat line. 6,000 years ago. 6,000, wait a minute. That's almost exactly what the Bible says. BBC has endorsed the Bible. I don't think they realize it. Maybe they had a creationist on staff and they didn't know. Right? Maybe somebody snuck that in. Right? So Let me say, well, okay, some people are skeptical about this population growth. You know, it's up and down, people, you know, all that stuff. All right, let's just work this a little bit then. I think I used this one the last time. Let's say creation wasn't 6,000 years ago, but let's say it's 7,000 years ago, just 1,000 years earlier. Just 1,000 years earlier, 7,000 years ago. All right, let's slide it over here to the left. How many people would there be on the earth today? You see this? Exponential growth? Now, it's not going to happen. It's not even possible. But the pressure would be to have how many people? Roughly 450 billion. That's only 1,000 years earlier. Well, wait a minute. If the evolutions are right and humans have been around for millions of years, how come there's only 7 billion people on the earth today? What happens? That means that every time the population grew up to billions, it must have died off, left two. Then increased again, billions, and died off, and left two. And I did it again, on and on and on and on, over and over again. And yet now, only now, within the past 6,000 years, the population has been growing. That's remarkable. What's the evidence for that? Zero. This fits in almost perfectly with the biblical account, but not with the evolutionary one. You know, let's talk about genetics. What time, Pastor? 1 o'clock? Is that where we're done? I'm good. I got lots of material here. So, genetics. So let's talk about human genetics. One of the driving forces of biological evolution is genetic defects, mutation. They're saying, and we're taught in school, that every now and then there's a good beneficial mutation that natural selection grabs a hold of, and then it carries on. Okay, nobody's ever seen that. Nobody can come up with a very indisputable beneficial mutation, but you just have to believe it. Just assume. Just imagine that every now and then some beneficial mutation comes along and natural selection can glean it and it carries on to the next generation. Okay. I have a list of 1,000 PhD scientists who don't agree with it, but that's the story you have to believe. What are mutations? Mutations are a there are many different kinds of mutation, but it's a copying error in the genetic code, in the DNA. Right? There are other mutations, but so what happens over time? You got to remember, Adam and Eve, when they were created, their genetic code would have been perfect. No mutations. So Adam and Eve here, okay. Now, that's not the way it is now, obviously. We have mutations. I have a niece who has Down syndrome. It's a genetic mutation. There are 60 mutations. Let's say, for example, 60 mutations in, it's hard to believe, but in my genetic code. Right? And my wife might have the same. So we pass them down to our kids, right? So our four sons and their kids will have our mutations plus the mutations that they encounter in their lifetime. So every generation you get more and more mutations. It's always accumulating. So if these mutations were always accumulating, then what's going to happen in the long term? In the long term, any organism which has mutation eventually dies. It's going to die out. It can only go on for so many generations. It's a downhill slope, which is exactly what science tells us, that every mutation, every generation is worse than the one before. Even though we are living somewhat longer based on better health and medical care, etc., it's a losing game for humanity, for every living thing, because every mutation. And this fits in with the biblical account that Adam, if we're perfect, 100%, but we've been slowly getting worse over time. Evolutionary theory says the opposite. Things have been getting better over time. First, we had that single cell amoeba somewhere, and it's been somehow gathering all these genetic information, this coding, etc., and it gets more and more complicated over time, and we're getting better and better and better. And yet, real genetics says it's the other way around. We're getting worse and worse and worse. And that would account for the declining lifespan. Adam and Eve were supposed to live forever. Because of sin, it was reduced to a low 900 years plus. And after the flood, now we're down to 120, 100, and 100 years, you know, 100 years, 90 years, 80, something like that. So in light of that, let's look at living fossils. What are living fossils? Well, those are creatures who allegedly died out. In this particular case, coelacanth. It was a lot more stretchy, my thing, right? 65 million years ago, they thought, oh, this is a... The reason why it's interesting, because the flippers, they say, look like it's turning into limbs so it could walk on land. Here's a transitional species, they say. Great. The only trouble is that they actually find them alive. Out of near Madagascar, you can see there, and it's swimming along. Now, it's just a fantastic fish. Those fins aren't legs at all. They just allow it to basically move in all kinds of directions, kind of like the hummingbird. Its wings can allow it to go forward, backwards, up and down like a little drone. And this fish can do the same thing. It can swim vertical, etc. Amazing. Here's the ammonite. If you go down to the old port in Montreal at the Notre they'll have a shop in there. What's the Bon Secours, I think it is. And they have a fossil. They have a big ammonite. About $4,000. Oh, I'd really like to get that. Don't want to spend the $4,000, but I really like that. So this is the sign on it, millions of years old. Problem is, these things are alive today. But the interesting thing to note is they are unchanged over the alleged millions of years. How is that possible? What we know about genetic mutations accumulating over time, these things should have died out over time, not stay the same. Evolution is about change, not stasis, not change. How can not change be evidence of change? Doesn't logically make sense. And we're going to skip this carbon 14. Well, anyway, talk about carbon 14. Everybody talks about carbon dating, you know, and it proved dinosaurs lived on millions of years. First of all, if they mention carbon 14 and they're not not a creationist in association with dinosaurs, they don't know what they're talking about. Carbon 14 is a relatively short half-life of radioactive material, and it decays fairly quickly, turns to nitrogen 14. Okay. So anyway, it's kind of like carbon 14, as the chart will show you, it decays away in, let's say, 50, 60,000 years. So that means there should be zero. If the whole Earth was made of carbon 14, in 60,000 years, it should be all gone. Now, some is being made from cosmic radiation, etc. So, diamonds. Jump over to diamonds. Diamonds are, going to De Beers' website, taken from the bowels of the earth, 2 billion-year-old rocks, they say. And so you got a piece of ancient history. Except what are they finding? They're finding carbon-14 in it. But carbon-14 should be gone after 60,000 years. It's kind of like finding a cell phone in an Egyptian sarcophagus. So you have two choices. Either this, somebody put that cell phone in relatively recently, or else the pharaohs were talking on cell phones, right? This is kind of it. You're finding something that shouldn't be there. That's what they find carbon for. And this website says diamonds are vastly older, so carbon dating cannot be used to date them. Except that we do find, in all kinds of diamonds, we do find carbon 14. And yes, folks, good to know. How long does it take to turn something into diamond? Diamond is a hard form of, the hardest form of carbon. Well, very short period of time. In fact, they make industrial diamonds. And now a website, probably out of California, because all the weird things come out of there, right? You can now take the ashes of your loved ones and turn them into diamonds. That's right, folks. When somebody says you'll be with me forever, that's what they meant. I tell my wife, don't even think about it. Okay. Right. And they've even found carbon-14 in dinosaur bones. So that means that they're not anywhere near millions of years old. Right. So we've got the scientific evidence to show they're rather young. We're moving along here. I don't want you to miss your lunch. So when I look at fossils and dinosaurs, why do I have to believe they're billions or millions of years old when we have scientific evidence that shows that dinosaur bones are thousands of years old? And you know, a lot of physical properties we see take millions of years. I've been out to Alberta, and they have a lot of oil. And we're told that oil forms underground. It takes millions of years for this organic material to turn into crude oil. Well, I don't think so, because you can turn a crude algae, for example, into crude oil in an hour. In fact, there's an algae farm. Some people are looking at that and say, listen, how can I get... They grow algae and they turn into crude oil. An hour. And you know about the stalactites and stalagmites? You've heard about those, and they go into spelunking. You go into caves and say, well, you know, those things take hundreds of thousands of years. Don't touch that, sir, because you won't be around here to see it. I said, well, you know, we actually have these in Montreal. That is true. We have stalactites, stalagmites in our sewer system, unused. Right? And you can actually go on tours, Montreal Tourism website. You can see here, sorry about the picture, right? You can see here, this here is a stalagmite. They even say that. That's what it is. Some of the centuries-old tunnel could completely transform by stalactites and stalagmites. Right? So if this is 200 years, right? Why do I have to believe it takes hundreds of thousands of years to form? And there's other examples, which we don't have time. So I've been in aviation for 40 years now. Whenever I see an airplane, I'm like, wow. My wife says, why do you keep looking up over the plane? But you know, it's always the same plane, a Dash 8, which or whatever. Yeah, but it's just a plane. It's just a plane. You got to love it. Anyway, in 1942, they were ferrying some planes from North America over to England as part of the war effort. And some of the planes crash-landed on Greenland. The pilots walked away. They managed to land, but they couldn't take off again. So the plane sat there. And so somebody, an American, said, maybe I can get me some of them planes and restore it. So he then put together a team in the 90s, and they said, well, how deep are those planes going to be after 60, 70 years in the ground and in the snow? Well, they went on to the internet, and they said, well, let's talk about the ice layers on the cores on Greenland. And they said this, and you can get it from physics.org, right? So you say, well, it takes about 100,000 years to form the 2,000 to 3,000 meters worth of ice. All right, so somebody did a little calculation, takes that. That's roughly 6 centimeters per year. Oh, 6 centimeters per year? That's nothing. 6 centimeters per year, so it shouldn't be that deep, right? If I got 60 years times 30, that's maybe 10 feet deep, 3 meters deep. So they said, let's get their shovels out, and they headed up to Greenland. They get to Greenland, and they dug, and they dug, and they dug, and they found out it was, in fact, not 10 feet or 3 meters, it was 85 meters or 278 feet deep. That was a bit of a surprise, as you can imagine. So what happened here? So the assumptions about how fast these layers on Greenland were not based on anything observed. It's based on assumptions that, you know, layers are just assumptions. Pull out of the air. But here we have observed evidence that this doesn't, it's not the rate here that we're talking about, it's not 6 centimeters per year, but 28 times faster, roughly 1.7 meters per year calculated. So when I look at the entire 2,000 to 3,000 meters of ice, I think it's not going to take 100,000 years. It can be accumulated in 1,764 years, well within the biblical time frame. Now, the reason why this is important, it's interesting, is because based on these ice cores is what they use to talk about global warming, climate change. It's based on the assumptions about how fast these layers have been building up. Well, if you get it wrong, your assumptions are going to be way off. In this particular case, why do I have to believe all this ice in Greenland took, you know, 100,000 years when we can actually calculate it took about less than 2,000? Which would fit in with the ice age after the global flood, and that would make sense. As a matter of fact, they did get that plane flying, and flying in air shows in the United States. I'm just going to skip over here. We can do that. Pluto. Ooh, all this this is great stuff. But and moon dust. Oh, yeah, here's one thing. So I was going through the internet one time, and I came across this website, Naturalis Historia. And it says, the Nika Cave of Crystals is a giant problem for a young Earth. I thought, oh my goodness, this is the death knell of creationism. Initial estimates of the age of the crystals range from hundreds of thousands to possibly millions of years. Well, if they are hundreds of thousands of years old or millions of years old, then of course the whole biblical account is shot. And this guy says that provides a massive problem for creationists, the biblical account, because it would have had to have been done within the past 4,500 years. In fact, I went to BBC again, and they said about 26 million years ago, not that anybody saw that, but just based on their guesses, very slowly, over hundreds of thousands of years, blah, 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 blah. So I thought, well, how am I going to deal with this? So I'm giving you some examples of how you would deal with this when you see the same type of thing. Now, the Nika caves are very interesting. They were uncovered when they were doing some mining. So they had to pump out some water, deep mine, and as they took out the water, they found these crystals. Now, it was a little warm down there, 58 degrees Celsius, rather warm. Here you can see a guy in there, right? It's amazing. Kind of reminds me of Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, doesn't it? Right? Huge crystals, 65 feet long, huge, massive crystals. And they say, well, you know, it takes that long to get so slow to get that. I said, well, actually, how fast do crystals form? How fast do they grow? Does it take, they only grow like millimeters per centuries? I thought, well, again, I went to the internet, and they actually have crystal growing contests on the web. You can actually check that out. So I went to one of them, and you can actually grow crystals. So you take this thing in a solution, you do this real fast, and then you drop it in there, and overnight, there you are. You got these crystals, right? And you can do all kinds of wonderful things with it. You can make it as a lamp holder or a little, look at that, clear coat spray with it. So this is overnight. You know, the UCLA, University of California, Los Angeles, also wanted to grow a crystal. So they said, well, you know, if it takes thousands and thousands of years to get an inch, we're going to be a long time here. So they actually decided to grow a crystal in their lab, and they got this crystal in 2 months. Look at the size of that thing. So this idea that crystals grow at a snail's pace over thousands and thousands, hundreds of thousands of years is not borne out by any scientific evidence. It's just an assumption. So crystals, if I can get this much in 2 months, how long is it going to take to get 65 feet? 30 years? Nowhere near the hundreds of thousands of years. So why should I believe it took that long? Right. All right, we're going to come to a close here. So when you look at the biblical account, the Bible tells us that first God had made everything good. There was no death. Adam's sin brought death into the world. That's why we are dying. And therefore, everything that dies, or as evidence of that, is after the flood, after the creation account. And so it all has to take place, it all has taken place within the past 4,500, 6,000 years. And the fossil record is an evidence of all these things happening. The global flood of Noah provides us with a source of material and water in order to form all those layers of the Grand Canyon. And the flood actually to create the canyon itself. And when we look at all the processes, we're told allegedly took millions of years or hundreds of thousands of years going to snail place. We see that the scientific evidence does not bear that up. It's simply an assumption you have to believe. But actually, when you investigate from a scientific point of view, you find that that's hogwash. Right? So when somebody says, I believe in science, then you can say, ah, so do I. Let's talk about real science. Right?